Most songs are written about love, finding it and losing it. But today's guest sings about money, how to save it, how to share it, and how to spend it wisely. Hi, this is Candy O'Terry. Welcome to the story behind her success. Not everyone thinks personal finance is a topic to sing and dance about, but today's guest has made a career out of it. And since April is Financial Literacy Month, we thought we'd invite her onto the show. Her name is Julie Beckham, and this is her story. Julie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Candy.
You know, Julie, I've never met a singing banker before, so you're a first. Take us back to 2011. You were working at a bank called Blue Hills Bank when you were asked how you could make learning about money accessible and fun. Tell us that story.
Blue Hills Bank at the time just started a foundation and wanted to make a splash in the world of financial education. At that time, we had just emerged from, 2008 financial crisis, and President Obama actually called upon financial institutions to help the community and educate them on personal finance. So, of course, when I was asked this question, I said I would start at the youngest age and I would write a musical about money and perform it for free in elementary schools. And to my surprise, this idea was well accepted. I put together a proposal for the bank's foundation, and here we are more than a decade later, and 80,000 students have seen Miss Money in the Coins and have sung the tune for financial literacy.
Make it, save it, share. With me this time. Make it, save it, share it, spend it. Make it, save it, share it, spend it. Make it, save it, share it, spend it. Make it, save it, share it, spend it again.
Let's cheer it.
Make it, save it, share it, spend it.
So you create this character called Ms. Money and the musical Ms. Money and the Coins. Your target is elementary school age children. Tell us why you think it's so critical to introduce children to saving, to sharing, and spending money responsibly at an early age.
The early age is key because they're curious. When you teach something, you want your students to care. You want them to lean in. And there is nothing more a child wants to lean into than something that they see their parents, their family, their older siblings engaging with. And everybody engages with money every day, whether it's now not coins anymore, but credit cards and debit cards and Venmo and all the ways that we can transact. But kids are excited about it. So let's get to kids when they're eager to learn.
And I'm also guessing that if you teach them early about the value of spending your money wisely, they do a better job of it when they're adults.
Absolutely. I mean, it's proven that lessons learned early last a lifetime. So why not get in these important lessons of saving, sharing, and spending money?
Ms. Money and the Coins includes 5 lesson plans. Each lesson has a song, and that song kicks off the activity. Have you always been a songwriter? And I ask this because I'm a budding songwriter. How do you write your songs? Do you play an instrument? I mean, bring us into this part of your world.
Yeah, I think I've always been a storyteller. In a sense, I wanted to be an actor growing up because I loved being somebody else and telling their story. I'm fortunate enough to be wise enough to surround myself with very talented people. So I didn't actually write the music to it. I wrote the lyrics and the storyline and the script, but I collaborated with a composer who wrote the music. And thankfully, he is so talented and those tunes are so catchy that people have continued to sing these songs. And while I was in person for so long performing these, now it's all online. Miss Money's Classroom is on the Rockland Trust website, accessible for free in English, Spanish, and at the end of the month in Portuguese.
You're so fortunate that you were able to find a composer who could put your lyrics to music and create these memorable songs. Was it hard to find someone? I mean, tell us how it went.
You know, it's funny. The courses our life takes. I was doing summer stock in my late teens, early 20s, and we started a children's theater program at the Summer Stock Theater, and I collaborated with Travis Ploger, who is still writing music and lives in D.C. And the fun thing is that we've never met. We collaborated on several musicals before I reached out to him to write Miss Money and the Coins. And you surround yourself with enough people and have enough fun experiences, you eventually meet and network with the people you're supposed to work with.
animators to help you create these videos. They are just amazing. So how did you connect with animators?
Another chance opportunity where I was looking to expand the program. I had transitioned from being in person, obviously, during COVID, and I was zooming into classrooms and wearing my green dress and, you know, my virtual background and singing in my home office. And then I thought, you know what, this is working and I'm able to reach more students if I could get this into more languages. And so I said, let's make this more fun. And who doesn't like animation? I'm a huge fan of Sesame Street and all the things that tie children into learning. Planet Nutshell is the local animation company that I engaged with, and we were able to make this really fun, engaging introductory video.
What was it like for you to see the whole thing come to life?
It is amazing to go from the point of being asked, how would you be creative about teaching the community about money, to a decade and a couple of years later, to seeing this be a multilingual program that anyone in the world can access with all these different modules of learning. It's fantastic.
These lesson plans can be done in schools or at home, and they include these short videos. There's a theme to each lesson, so give us just a quick description of each. Another day, another dollar.
Oh, that is an introduction to the characters who you're going to engage with throughout the program.
Needs versus wants.
That is the daily struggle of trying to figure out what is important to spend your money on and what maybe you can hold off on.
Did she really spend it all?
This is also a daily occurrence when you go into your purse or your pocketbook or your wallet or your bank account and think, oh goodness, I may be overindulged.
Give a little.
Give a little, get a lot is about how when you give of yourself, your time, your talent, or your funds, you can get more than you gave.
Make it, save it, share it, spend it.
This is the one that is left in every teacher's head and that the kids are dancing to during recess, and it sums up the entire lesson.
All these lesson plans, including talking points, creative activities, vocabulary words, and approved standards from the Department of Education. What has been the reaction of teachers?
I had a teacher said to me the other day, this is a no-brainer. This is easy for me to implement, and my kids loved it. They were sad when it was over, and they begged to bring the booklets that we printed out home. So if I can make something fun for children and easy for teachers, then that's a win-win.
You've been in 200 schools over 13 years. What do the children say to you?
You know, what's funny is they said, what channel are you on? So
I'm on the money channel.
So it is fun to, you know, to have this now transform into an online platform. But really, they say, when are you coming back? And that is really the best compliment from a student.
You've also created a podcast. So let's talk about that. No Shame in This Money Game. Tell us all about it. I see you have 24 episodes.
Yes. This was an attempt to really take this engaging platform of teaching children and really transform it to adults, because we're not taught about personal finance. This is not something that we're taught in our schools. So adults are now adulting and living their financial lives and have a lot of questions, but they don't really know how to ask, and they might be a little bit ashamed to ask. So the No Shame in This Money Game invites experts to come on and kind of demystify these complicated concepts. And also in the Mini Money Minutes format, really just takes acronyms and concepts and breaks it down in a really quick, digestible few minutes, so that in between the hustle and bustle of your daily life, you might be able to learn something.
Perfect to listen to in the car, right? While you're stuck
exactly.
In a traffic jam. You have also covered scams with a focus on seniors. This is called Spot the Scam.
Correct. I mean, scams are so prevalent, and we all have to be aware. And though these videos were intended for senior citizens, they are applicable for everyone. In fact, 18 to 24-year-olds are now being scammed more than senior citizens. So these videos really teach about the common ways that we are susceptible and how to take that breath between responding to a scammer and really checking in with yourself to see if this sounds familiar, if this sounds safe. And I think the videos do a really good, quick job at reminding ourselves to do those things.
Well, Ms. Money and the Coins is really the centerpiece, and that has won so many awards. So congratulations. Do you have any plans to take this curriculum all across the country?
You know, now that it's accessible, it can be accessible all across the country or the
world. And around the world.
Exactly. So, I mean, our mission at Rockland Trust is to make sure that our community members have a healthy relationship with money. So that is the focus. But if we can affect more change in doing that just in our area, then that's amazing.
How important is it for children to see their parents acting responsibly about money?
The onus is on parents for everything, so we can't be perfect. But I think that the important thing is talking about it and not feeling ashamed about it. When you make a mistake, it's important to talk about it. And I think children are interested in that because children make mistakes. And teenagers make mistakes, and we all feel ashamed, and we all feel like we don't know what we're doing sometimes. So I think the more we can be transparent without stressing our children out about the real adult problems, but giving them a little glimpse, opening the door a little for the conversation about, well, when this happened, I did this, and if I had known this, I might have done it differently.
Speaking of children, can we back up and talk a little bit about your childhood? Can you tell us, where are you from? Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Canton, Massachusetts.
What was life like in your house?
It was fun. I really had a great childhood. I have an older brother and an older sister, and my parents were fun. You know, maybe the best description is that friends would come by and they said, "We never know what's happening at your house." So it was always an adventure.
So it was the place that your friends wanted to come to.
Yes, right? Yes, yeah.
So what were the values in your home when you were growing up?
Family is everything. But family is not defined by who you're related to. Just have a sense of humor. I think humor was probably the driving force of our household.
You know, I'm interested in that phrase that you used about family is not just about who you're related to. Talk more about that.
My mother is a columnist, and she wrote about everything my entire life. She didn't start her career as a writer until I was born. And she knows so many people and has made so many friends. And we had a small family. I didn't have any cousins. But I feel like when your heart is open to other people's stories and other people's lives, the people that come into it become like family. There was never a holiday where there wasn't somebody random who was at our table, or somebody new, or somebody old who just didn't have a place to go. And I think that that's an invitation to live a life that is a little bit more full.
Talk to our listeners a little bit more about your mom's incredible career.
Oh, yes. My mom is Beverly Beckham. One of my favorite questions is Beverly Beckham your mom? When I introduce myself. And she has a wonderful career in the greater Boston area as being a columnist. And
a storyteller.
Yes. And most recently, she sings her stories as well. She's also a great advocate for my niece Lucy, who has Down syndrome. So she's been very active advocating for those who don't have voices, not only in the Down syndrome community, but in many others as well.
Well, you're also related to Lauren Beckham Falcone. And she and I worked together in radio. So there's a theme going on here.
There is a theme. You know, I'm not sure anybody else can get a word in edgewise when the three of us are around. But my sister is actually a radio personality on a morning show.
That's right, on WROR. And she's known as LBF.
Correct.
On WROR on the morning show. Your love of musical theater runs very deep. It's obvious that your family was full of fun and didn't take themselves seriously, but I'm guessing that you showed talent and a love for the theater early on in your life. Tell us about your experience.
I just got the bug. I was in my fifth grade musical. It was The Wizard of Oz. I wanted Dorothy. I got Dorothy. And then there was no turning back. My siblings will say it was a great excuse for me to not empty the dishwasher, because then suddenly I was in all the dance classes and all the voice lessons and very, very busy pursuing this dream. But I just loved performing.
What is it that you love about performing?
I think at the beginning, it was kind of my placement in the family. I was the youngest. I was entertaining. I made people happy. And I think that that was a role that I enjoyed. As I grow older, I think it's more about connecting with people and finding the different stories to tell through other characters or other songs.
Who were your role models when you were growing up?
My grandmother, my father's mother, played a big role in my upbringing. Just her presence was very strong. But I think I also was very lucky to have two amazing parents who supported me no matter what.
How important was it for you to have an elder like your grandmother in your life? They give you so much perspective, right?
Yeah, she gave us a lot of perspective, my entire family, and we still quote her and reference stories from her.
From looking at all the work that you've done so far, Julie, one of the things I want to say to you is I'm overwhelmed by your work ethic. I mean, when you decide you're going to do something, you make it happen. Where does that come from?
I don't know, but I see it in my daughter now, and it makes me like, I kind of like, it throws me for a loop. So that's really funny that you just said that in that way. I just am fiercely determined when I want to do something.
You attended the prestigious Tisch School of the Arts at NYU. Tell us about that experience.
It was amazing. We live in a time now where these universities are not only accepting a smallest percentage of people, but they're financially unattainable for most people. This was 25, 30 years ago, and luckily it was still competitive, and I had to work really hard to get into this particular program. But I was able to do it, and I just feel so fortunate to be able to be plopped into New York City at 18 with all of the dreams and the determination that I had at the time was an experience that I value to this day.
Well, speaking of the dreams and the goals, there you were, just a few blocks away from the footlights of Broadway. What was your goal then?
My goal was to be a working actor, really. To, you know, Broadway was the ultimate, but my goal was to just be a working actor.
So the question is, how do we end up in banking?
Very circuitous. So I was a working actor. I mean, nobody knows the shows I was in. I was in a musical about Amelia Earhart, where I played everybody but Amelia. I was in a musical about Ben Franklin, where I played everybody but Ben. And I was picked up on a van on the side of 40th Street and 10th Avenue at 5:30 in the morning to tour the tri-state area. And I had every job in between, from, you know, nanny to personal assistant to waitress, but, you know, managed to put it all together. I knew that I had to be in it for the long haul, and I was, but it got very tiresome, and I was missing things. And when my niece Lucy was born, and my sister had a baby up here in Massachusetts, and I was in New York, I said, I cannot miss this. And that is what drove me home.
Your job title is AVP, Financial Education Development and Strategy Officer. Nice and long. Sounds really big. At Rockland Trust. How has this job checked all your boxes?
I chose NYU, their program, because I could spend as much time in a conservatory training, honing my skills as an actor, as I could in a university and taking whatever kind of classes I wanted to, because I love learning. And I think that my role at Rockland Trust allows me to keep my creativity, values my creativity, and to also continue to learn and be surrounded in this wonderful environment that Rockland Trust has created.
Giving back to the community is also a big part of your story. You are a 5-time rider in the Pan Mass Challenge. Tell us about that experience.
Oh, my goodness. This was, you know, I was new to banking, and some of the folks were doing the Pan Mass Challenge, and I thought, I'll do that. And I came home to my son, who was then 8 years old, and I said, I signed up today to ride a bike 50 miles, you know, to raise money for cancer. And my son stopped and he said, do you even know how to ride a bike? Do you know how long that is? And I mean, he's very mathematically minded. So I just laughed. I'm like, yes, I know how to ride a bike, but you're right, it is long. So anyway, I did that a couple times. I did the 80-mile one, and it is long, but it is a challenge, and that's what you're in for. And it's a wonderful community of people who are doing some great things. So I've loved doing it.
Well, you've mentioned your son, and you mentioned your daughter, and your love for your niece, Lucy, as well. How did motherhood change you?
Well, being an aunt changed me more than motherhood. So that when Lucy was born, it changed my life, and I came back here. And then it made me want to be a mother. But to be honest, I was really scared because I didn't think I could love someone as much as I loved my niece. There's a magical thing about love is that it's infinite. You have more to give. I didn't believe in that. But I think that it made me believe in the infinite power of love. And it also changed so many of my priorities. I mean, to this day, I love family and I love my family.
You know, the sister bond. I'm an only child, but I've heard the sister bond is real.
Yeah.
And when your sister had this child born with special needs, how did that pull you back? How did that create the need for you to stop what you were doing in New York City and come home to your sister?
I don't know exactly how it stopped. it was like the world stopped at that point because, you know, we all needed each other. And so I think that's when you discover what the epicenter of you is and how you want to live the rest of your life. And that's what it did for all of us.
Last three questions we ask everybody who sits where you are. And thank you so much, Julie, for coming today. When an obstacle is in your path, how do you get around it?
I think I use it like a prop. There was a dance teacher once who told me that it's hard to make up a step if you have no limitations. But if you tell someone you have to make up a step only on one foot or with your right hand up in the air, then suddenly you can be creative. And I think that I've used obstacles creatively so that I can succeed.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever received, and can you pass that along to our listeners today?
Oh, my goodness. I think that my parents both have said many different times is take every opportunity you can because some days the opportunities will stop, and that's what I continue to do.
Final question. I believe that we live our lives in chapters, and right now yours is pretty exciting. What does success mean to you?
Success right now is feeling fulfilled in my work and making a difference in my work while being able to take a step back and appreciate the people and their role in my life right now and really spend some time with them.
I want to say thank you so much for joining us today on The Story Behind Her Success. Thank you, Julie Beckham.
Thank you so much, Candy.
And that's The Story Behind Her Success for this week. My thanks to Julie Beckham, aka Ms. Money. Check out her podcast, No Shame in This Money Game, and discover more about her engaging curriculum, music, lessons about financial literacy in both English and in Spanish by going to rocklandtrust.com. And thank you so much for listening to the show. I'm always on the lookout for the next woman to profile. So if you know someone I should feature on the show, will you please just reach out and let me know? Nominate her today. Just go to candyoterry.com. That's Candy with a Y, OTERRY.com. I'll have a new inspiring story for you next week. And remember, when we lift each other up, we all rise. What's your story? I can't wait to hear it.